host, Jason Nevro. You are listening to The Life Autistic. It is July 1st, 2025. It's a Tuesday. Tuesday is my usual temple day, temple evening. And I'm just coming back from the temple trip. There are several things to talk about today, because I was awakened this morning with an interesting sensation that I needed to do a mission statement. Something that I need to be doing. I've been concerned recently that my job may evaporate out from under me, or that maybe I need to be doing something different with the resources that my job gives me. As my savings account gets large enough, I start thinking of what to invest that money in. Lisa and I have thought about it, talked about it, or I've talked about it. Lisa's much more conservative with her money than I am. We were just looking at an opportunity that we had heard about through an advertisement, and it just smelled like kind of a Ponzi scheme. And anyway, so there is this big question of what exactly should we do with the money that we have. I'm to the point right now where I could easily put back an entire year's worth of money in my Roth IRA, but that's only at this point in my life I can put back $8,000. I could put that back with a pretty good buffer in place. I could do it right now so it could start earning interest now, as opposed to waiting until some, I don't know, magic moment when right at the end of the year or something, to say that I've done my 8,000, but it would earn more if I do it as soon as I earn the 8,000, and I can put it in and boost some of my investments, that would boost that investment up to $18,000, which is excellent. Anyway, so let me read to you the mission statement that I've got so far. Pretty much just what I came up with almost immediately upon waking this morning. Let me pull it up here. Okay, it says, here's the mission: to take a ministerial leadership role in my personal development and the development of others. I'm kind of a goofy on human development. And I think human development is to get us to exaltation. That's the point of it. You can take a lesser reward if you wish, but that's not the point of your development. And I'll talk about that a little bit more later. But okay, let me do it again. Take the ministerial leadership role, my personal development and the development of others, in both temporal and spiritual paradigms, that there's a boilerplate word, I tell you, toward a multifaceted exaltation. I don't like that, multifaceted exaltation. I don't know why I put it in there, but I'm going to leave it in there for a while, see if it see if it creates some insight later. This was done in probably about 5 minutes after I woke up this morning. And then I got a goal statement, which was something that I have wrestled with for a very long time, probably over a decade, which is I've been always been kind of setting myself up for being considered to be a presiding bishop. Now that's also tied to my heritage, my patrilineal line, apparently back to Aaron. My great 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 grandfather and his father were priests in the Jewish tradition, which comes from the Israelite tradition. And so that's the mission statement, and then that's the vision statement. Not that I will become the presiding bishop, but if it comes up in the councils of the church, the high councils of the church, and they say we're going to do a new presiding bishop, that I would be an interesting kind of dark horse consideration for them to prey upon. The fact that I am of the priestly lineage, I'm not the firstborn, but I'm in that lineage, and hopefully trying to get to being someone of, I don't know if using the term spiritual stature is appropriate, but like I said, being somebody that when they go start thinking about it, that I might be on that list. And they would say, oh, not Nemro. No, he is an interesting soul. I'm not certain at all that's a good idea. He would be outside of what we would consider to be standard and appropriate. Anyway, so, and then down, there are several goals. I've already done the first one, which is to try to integrate, well, no, I haven't really done it so far as to integrate some of the religious leadership things I have done in my resume sufficient for that, for I have absolutely no idea what kind of work I would be going for in relation to this. It also mixes up for maybe a couple of years. I have occasionally gone back and said, you know, I probably need to get my PhD just because I probably need to rise to that level. Yet again, another stature sort of a thing. If I can do it, I probably should do it. Within the capacity to do this, especially since I'm doing it in what I guess would be considered something of a lighter science. And it's not a science, it's a professional degree. Somewhat like a doctor or a lawyer. It's a doctor of ministry in used to be called Engaged Wisdom. It comes out of an outfit called Ubiquity University, which is just a couple of PhDs. It's just a couple of steps above a diploma mill, but you actually have to do work to get it. It's not like you just pay some money and they will give you this degree. It's got something behind it, and it teaches. It lets you explore. It feels incredibly left wing. It's very liberal arts. Wisdom is a strange subject upon which to embark. It's quite broad. I think the term philosophy itself comes basically from wisdom, the study of wisdom or something along those lines. But I really like it because, like I said, it's more of a professional degree. It's for application of information, research perhaps, as opposed to generating pure research, which I'm not terribly interested in. But I'm interested in going in different directions. But, of course, for getting the actual degree, probably I'll need to do something that's a little more, there has been research done on, and how to apply it in ways that are wise, for lack of a better term. And I kind of like that whole way of looking at it. I also don't mind the fact that it seems to be something that would really be clutched onto by very left-leaning, liberal-minded people. It doesn't bother me. I am not a conservative like my wife. I am a classical liberal. Some people call themselves that come from this, sometimes call themselves libertarians. I am basically just a classical liberal. I am willing to explore in places that conservatives don't consider very reputable, but to try and see what good things will come of it and to put it into application. It's kind of like the whole idea of, you know, many red states in the United States, which are conservative, that's why you call them red. Well, it's actually red because it's Republican, but kind of leans conservative, have been ditching what's called whole language, where you try to learn whole words, you know, for like reading and comprehension and stuff like that. The more conservative-leaning people are going toward phonics, which I think is silly. I think it's overwrought. You know, they said, well, they can sound it out, and then they can read. And you go, I disagree completely. I often get put into the place of trying to listen to people who read scripture. And when they're reading it, they butcher it because they don't know the words that they're reading. They sound it out, and they get something and it's wrong. And that's very disconcerting for the whole reason that if you don't understand what you're reading, you're missing the whole point. And in a religious context, I equate it to basically reciting some kind of incantation. It's like back in the old days, not the old days, when I was very young, you know, Mass was done, and I'm not Catholic, but Mass was done in Latin, and nobody understood it. Priests probably didn't understand it. They just knew how to sound it out. And it was basically some kind of mystical incantation. You know, in speaking the blessing on the communion in Latin, it was a mystical incantation that would change the constituent things into the body and the blood of Christ. Now it's changed, and now most Catholic priests do these kinds of things in the local vernacular, the regular language of the people. And so the people actually can understand what's being said and what's meant by it. Not that it is really all that great for basic meaning from the people that are engaged in it. They just ramble it off, I guess, or they just listen to it. And maybe they can even recite it themselves because they've heard it often enough, but yet they don't really listen to what's being said. It happens everywhere. This is one of the natural tendencies of man. The tendency of a natural man, which is an enemy to God, is that even when there's spiritual things going on, it is rote, it is simply done. It is, you know, it's almost more important that it has a certain cadence that people like to hear that's normal to them. If you say it without that cadence, people are jarred because you're not saying it right. And you're going, it's words that form sentences, that forms a statement, and that, you know, and that constitutes a prayer in the LDS Church, Church of Christ Latter-day Saints. It's the blessings on the sacrament emblems. And these, you know. And most people can rattle them off, but without thinking, what does this really mean? Anyway. This happens so often. And it's not good. It's not good at all. Because it has a deeper meaning. And it's a deeper meaning that can only begin to be understood if you use the correct words. In the Latter-day Saint tradition, it's very important that the words must be said, enunciated clearly and correctly every time. If it's not done that way, it must be done again until it is done that way. So you slow down a little bit. You make sure you enunciate well. You make sure you put all the words in there. You make sure you don't slur it. Stuff like that. Things that you would have a tendency to do if you were just performing some kind of mystical incantation that only God was really supposed to worry about, that everybody else was just witnessing it happening. And I don't want to pick on Catholics at all. A beautiful liturgy, full of meaning and purpose. Great stuff. I think there are many Latter-day Saints who would profit greatly off of a study of Catholic beliefs and dogma. If they're not going to really study like, for instance, the Book of Mormon, which is the keystone scripture of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I don't know if keystone, capstone, something. A person will come closer to God through that book than by reading any other book. So, for Latter-day Saints, the Book of Mormon is, you don't want to say the superior document over the Bible, probably. But we don't really have much to say about what kind of foundational place the Bible has. Not saying that it is not scripture, that it does not contain the words of prophets and apostles and of Jesus Christ himself. I'm not trying to denigrate it at all. But just to say, the primary way that people come to and stay with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is the Book of Mormon. It's what keeps me around. It was my first real spiritual experience with God that I can document and say, this happened. This is the time that it happened. And this is what it informed me on. I wasn't going to go on a mission, and then I actually read the Book of Mormon with a person with the purpose of knowing if it was true. And I got the answer. So many other people have taken what's called Moroni's promise, the very last chapter of Moroni before he completes the book. There are verses in there that talk about that you can know whether the Book of Mormon is truly contains the words of prophets. And I have a testimony that it does. It has been made manifest to me by the Holy Spirit that the Book of Mormon is a true record, and it is a record of a people who were striving to do what God wanted them to do, or at least of a people who wanted to do what he wanted them to do, and of their walk with God, for lack of a better term, and Jesus Christ's visit to the American continent. I've had a spiritual confirmation that it is an inspired record, inspired by God, and contains the gospel of Jesus Christ as revealed to the people on the American continent. Ta-da, that's it. Okay, so I don't know exactly how to weave that into this Ubiquity University, because I wouldn't say that there has been a vast number of Latter-day Saints who have pursued this degree. They tend to go to BYU or to Ivy League schools. At least those who are prominent, that's where they have gotten the bulk of their education from. Not from some interesting university that is a little, I don't want to say flaky, but that takes a somewhat left-leaning view on lots of things and how one approaches that. I don't think it would generate a problem for me. It might be interesting in that once I'm done and they say, well, now you've got a whole bunch of colleagues that also went through the same program, and you guys can work together on projects. You can start organizations together. And it's like, you know, I don't really know if I'm going to do that, because I would have to say that by and large, I would be of a different philosophical bent than they are. But that isn't to say that we should leave such institutions, such learning modalities, to one ideology, to the exclusion of all others. I find that inappropriate. And worthy of saying, I pay my money just like you do. Therefore, you know, I'm gonna have this credential. But now, of course, there's become all kinds of things where some universities, due to some kind of DEI purification ritual, are taking back conferred degrees. And it's like, wow! I said that I thought the whole point of it was that once you conferred this degree, it was theirs, and they could go out and they could function as a scholar or as a professional without threat of having that credential pulled. Anyway, so it keeps coming back. I looked at it first a couple of years ago, and it was like, ooh, that sounds so interesting. Got a little excited about it too. But, you know, Lisa at the time, and I agree with her, says, Jay, there's no return on investment, and it's a silly thing to spend money on. It's something that's not going to produce more money for you. And I'm gonna have to say, you know what? There are larger things than income generation, particularly. And the whole thing is, says, you know what, Lisa? I don't know. Am I using my master's degree right now? No, but I think good has come of having it. And generating some of the products that I pulled together. It was a project-based degree program. When I went through it and I did my project, it was mostly on paper. It was mostly a tabletop. What do you call it? It's not like a war plan. A tabletop project. And you normally do this as part of a project just to say, yeah, this is doable. We can get this done. And I would be interested in doing this because a person with a doctoral degree, by rid of it being a doctorate degree, means that you can certify other doctors of that ilk, of that sort, of that kind. And if you wanted to found a school of thought that gives you added oomph in being able to say, you know, this is a person that has reached the stature to be able to do that, as opposed to just a master, which is like, no, that doesn't mean anything, you know. A master can mint, but not really, can teach low-level courses for an undergraduate degree, for instance, but not really do graduate work unless they're under the supervision of a PhD or a person with a doctorate degree. And so you want to have that doctorate degree so that you can do the whole gamut. And your degree certifies the whole thing as being somewhat legitimate. Now you know, they say, whoa, there's accreditation. And of course, this is the kind of place where it says, you know what? We certify that it is a rigorous program that actually has great value and that people who graduate from it, have an ability to do this thing in large part independently, in fact, fully independently. Anyway, so I still go back and think about the doctorate of ministry. It's rather inexpensive for a doctoral program. It's only $18,000. I have $18,000. I have $18,000 outside of what would be considered the safety fund too. Now I'm getting ready to take $8,000 of it and stick it in my Roth IRA so that it can be, I can do it for investments on into when I'm not making actual money. But I think, and I guess my ethical background would say that I really want to be able to hang on, I'm checking to see if my recording's still happening. It is. Okay, good. To make sure that, you know, well, oh, God, now I forgot what I was saying. Oh, yes. My ethics kind of says, although you can retire, it's like from the whole idea of I've just got to make as much money as I possibly can or make a good deal of money. It isn't that I'm not going to make money when I'm older. I would rather do it in other ways than just goofing around on computers particularly. I want to do other things that I feel like are much more purposeful toward human development. And not just human development in the main, individual development of people that go to exaltation. It's very much something that you have as an individual and as families must pursue. Now, that doesn't mean that all family members are going to be involved with it. My family right now, there's a few members that have no interest in this. It's very sad. But to be honest, while they were children and while we were teaching them what we taught them, I don't know if I spoke on this subject particularly. But I do now, and it's out there, and it's available. My children, I doubt, listen to much of my stuff because that's just dad's weirdness. And, you know, this is, I hear so many times that your own children reject you. So you tend to attract to yourself your, I don't want to call them spiritual children, but your philosophical children, other people who say, I really like what he says, and I follow what he says, I follow what he does, perhaps I'm a student of his. and that this is this, and that sometimes these people will look on a favored student with more than more as one of their children than their actual natural born children, because of their wanting to follow in their footsteps on some kind of level. I've always told my own children, don't go to college until there's some need to go to college. Something you want to do, something you want to accomplish requires college, then go to it. Take advantage of it, but don't just go to college because that's what you're supposed to do after you finish high school. I had one daughter who did that, by and large. She went straight from high school to college. She also worked a little bit. She got herself into debt, you know, and I can't say much. I took on debt too. And I really appreciate the education that she got, except for the fact that I think she was really indoctrinated into deviancy leading to becoming a transgendered being. And I don't appreciate that at all. I can take some solace in the fact that I don't think my support of that daughter, she went off to college. She, you know, she took out loans. She went to college. And, I didn't help her much about that. And I'm kind of grateful because I think she got indoctrinated on it. Hey, I would hate to think that I was supporting her indoctrination. That bothers me. I'm glad she went after art. She was good at that. I'm not, you know, if she would have gone after something else, I would have been happy too. I don't know how much art she still does now. I hope she does some, even though she now has changed her name, renounced to us as her family, which I do not like at all. I find that detestable. And she's, anyway, but yeah, neither here nor there. Anyway, so I have to think, you know, is taking this study, if getting this doctorate degree is useful, or is it just me wanting to get a doctor, a DR in front of my name and hoping that's going to buy me something, which it probably won't buy me a thing. But it's something that if I do it, I think it opens some doors to capacity, to ability, to being able to do things. And I've always wanted to do that. I've always wanted to keep my options as open as I can and not turn down larger or wider opportunities just because I don't have a credential to do them. And so there is that. When you go to some professional organization to talk to give a presentation, that you're not just some schlub. You've got something you can say, This is what he has done over the years. Because much of my leadership pedigree, much of the stuff that would go into a resume that might say, well, yeah, he's got some leadership chops, is by and large a religious thing. It's things I've done religiously as opposed to getting paid for it. And I feel like this would help to certify that almost leadership credential to say, yes, this guy is a leader, you know, is a doctor of ministry. And you go, oh, yes. Have you been ministering? He says, oh, yes. Served in religious organizations, in one religious organization for many years. And I guess I want to certify, solidify, put a stamp on that that says that is a legitimate thing. And then I want to build on that. You know, and they say, well, why don't you just stay in computers and do that and get you a PhD in like data science or something, because that's not interesting to me. I got into computers only because I wanted something, because I would write out things in longhand and I didn't like it, and I couldn't afford word processors when I was young. My dad used to sell some of them. And I'm sorry, I just don't want that to be what I'm known for. I'd rather be known for something else. But, well, you're not going into academia. I says, well, you know what? Most doctors of ministry don't. They're actually out in the field doing things. Because that is what I want to, that's what intrigues me. It intrigues me from the whole thing of, I wonder what I'm going to do with that. I wonder how I'm going to make this happen. And I am of a rather interesting set of faith traditions. Israelite priests are an interesting sideline. It's almost a purposeless thing. In most regions of Jewry, they are nothing. They are considered an old appendage of a bygone day. There is no Jewish temple anymore. Some of them don't even talk about doing the Jewish temple ever again. The Orthodox Jews still do, but they have also relegated the role of priest to nothing, practically. There's a few things that if you have some Kohens in your midst, they have first dibs on certain things, reading in the synagogue, which is an interesting non-temple thing that Jews have just basically glommed onto. Yeah, I don't want to say anything bad about other belief traditions. When people says, well, are you Jewish? You go, I am not. I am an Israelite priest. Jewry is kind of like the Catholic Church to the original Christian Church. They all say, oh, no, that's us. We're that. And you go, there's plenty of others that either claim the same thing or say that there's something. It's a somewhat older tradition. I find it interesting. I've been reading through the Bible commentaries that have been done by Dennis Prager. And, of course, he is a very committed Jew, very well studied. I don't think he has done the effort of trying to become a rabbi, but he is so prominent in Jewish circles that he often gets treated as if he were a rabbi. Certainly is probably one of the most famous American Jews of our time. But, so I'm going through his, and I find it quite illuminating about, it's his take. I think he is very, I don't know if he's part of the Orthodox tradition. I don't see him wear a yarmulke, the skull cap, very often. So I'm thinking he's not particularly Orthodox. But he at least knows enough about it that he can speak to what they believe. He's studied on this quite much. Not only at Hebrew school that's traditional for a Jewish boy to go to, but also beyond that, he has been quite studious at this. And I don't know if he speaks particularly for Judaism, but I don't know of anybody who particularly does, period. You know? Anyway, so thinking that I'm still considering it. I know that Lisa's going to poo-poo the idea, because if education doesn't lead you to a more lucrative career than what you have now, she would consider that worthless. And yeah, the only thing that it's like, well, what is this thing gonna make you do? And you go, well, you know, this is like they're teaching a school. And you go, well, that would be a definite denigration. That would be less money. And you go, well, Lisa, it's not that I need the money. It says that, and I really don't want to be teaching in an educational in a state accredited institution in New Mexico, because then that would put all of my pension on hold. And I'd just as soon have my pension in addition to whatever I'd be making. Take care of those needs that way. I think it would be interesting. I take some of my aspirational cues from, frankly, one's Dennis Prager. He has spoken all over the world. He said, I forget how many countries he's been to. Most of them. Traveled quite extensively. Another one is John Taylor Gatto. Have something to say. Do something that certifies what you do. The funny thing about John Taylor Gatto is he calls it borrowing. He borrowed a friend's teaching license that he wasn't using. And he basically presented it as if it were his to get him into education. He did not study education. But, you know, this was way back in the past. And he says, yeah, well, he's passed away since, he's some years passed away now. But he would always talk about the fact that the statute of limitations is probably up on trying to get him into trouble for fraudulently saying that he had a teaching certificate. And he taught the public schools for 30 years, you know. And for school teachers, that is the ultimate, saying that you're a good teacher, you know. And he would say, you know, and it was true. He was the New York State Teacher of the Year a few times. But then he started making bank on doing interviews, speaking at conferences, mostly to homeschoolers, because he was a real proponent of homeschooling, and talking about how he actually conducted himself, which should have gotten him fired from being a school teacher. In fact, he was constantly in trouble with any administrator that was paying attention enough to notice that even though he got Teacher of the Year for things, he was constantly on the edge of being on probation or being fired for not doing teaching the way that teachers were supposed to do it. And those are two characters that make me say, at least I could do this thing as something to spend my time on, because if I just go into the kind of retirement and I don't fish, I don't have hobbies that I pursue very strictly. So it's like, what are you going to spend your autumn years doing, Nemro? And it's like, you know, I think I'm going to do things like that. And if the opportunities come up, I go to some interesting locale and go to some conference and speak at the conference, as long as somebody will sponsor my presence there. That's the biggest thing. It says, I'll come and speak as long as you feed me, provide my travel, put me up for the night, or for, you know, if it's a couple of day thing and you want me to do some presentations, I'd be glad to. So, I don't know if it'll make any money. He says, but to be really honest, I don't need the money particularly. He says, I just need to know I'm doing something of value to try to help the world be a better place. I said, I've pondered on this subject. I've written about it. I've gone to technical conferences and presented technical conferences. I don't like doing it. Because I, to be honest, I'm really a lightweight when it comes to that. It says, I just did this as a job. I am not some kind of an expert on any level at all. Things I do are rather esoteric. Wikis are kind of a dead thing. Programming I've done lately, it's been web programming, because I think that's really the only programming that really makes any sense now. I've done it all in PHP, although PHP is not what you would use today. You would use something like Java or something, which I think is weird, overkill. I'm just kind of a basic guy. I mean, like basic programming language, basic kind of guy. And PHP works for me. You know, and they go, oh, it's object-oriented now. And you go, yeah, and I bet you I don't use any of that object orientation, because it's just not, you know, it's just not interesting to me. Enough that I have created this exalts.net web application, just a little simulator, kind of like the Game of Life board game. It's kind of rendered for, you know, you need to become a certain kind of person that does certain kinds of things with an interest toward I don't know. What does God want me to do? It's like, oh, well, you just choose the things that are good and you stay away from the things that are bad. And you go, you know what? That's probably 3/4 of it. Now, there's some events that you need to do, but anyway. Oh, I need to be eating one of my chocolate bars to try to stay awake. This is important for this part of this little adventure. So anyway, I did my mission statement, my vision statement, and some goals tied to that. You can see them at wiki.quix.us. And you'll see them there. Anyway. Farwell here. I think I'm the Farwell right now. Then I cross the border into Texaco, and then I turn north out of Texaco toward Bellevue. Anyway, so I went to my endowment session tonight. Temple in Lubbock. That's where I'm coming home from. And I talked about this a little earlier about my thought that meditation might not be a school. Most people think it's a school. First part of the endowment, when it's talking about the council in heaven before the earth was formed, God's talking that Adam and Eve might choose the fall, and that there would be a savior there, that if Adam and Eve overcame, they did. They would be able to, wording is, with us, partake of exaltation, as if it were some fruit, the fruit of the tree of life. I don't know. But God is willing to freely share this fruit with those who overcome temptation through repentance. Well, he doesn't say that in there, but I figure it's kind of implied. Regardless, what about being stopped by a train? This is great. Sometimes you get really tied up with trains going across the tracks. You end up just stopping and saying, well, I'm not going to do anything for a while. If I'm going to get some water, I better get it now. Okay, I'm going to go over here and get some water. Now that I'm going to have to worry about a train coming. All right, so all right, I'm back. What's the problem? Come on. All right. I'm back on the road again. Getting some water. Expensive, I tell ya. Oh, great. Police out. Doing something. I think my turn off's before I get to them. Just as well. Get out of the area. Want to get in their way of whatever they're doing. I'll probably call this missions and visions. And so doing things like that. There are some insights from the endowment, how things are worded, and you know that how they're worded is intentional. So if it stayed in a certain way, it's like, well, yeah, it stayed that way. You need to learn something from it. Anyway, so. Okay, getting out of Texaco, going north. Trying to figure out if what I see as clouds in the sky are a reflection of like Clovis, or if it's just kind of twilight going out. It sure looks like it's twilight going out. But it's really late. About 9:43 here. I think for me, it's really important to have a sense of mission. What you're kind of up to. I've been doing kind of haphazard things for years now. The recordings, the website, the gopher, everything else. And as I look at it, step back a little from it. It is going in a religious direction, which is sensible. Some of these Latter-day Saint podcasters are getting into doing conferences, and that might open up an opportunity for me, even though it's like, do I have a podcast? They go, no, I don't. They have recordings, though, which may feel a little bit like a podcast, but it's not consistent enough. It's not tied to an RSS feed that doesn't feed out to you like a podcast. It's not like a channel. But that could be a method to do some of this stuff. Certainly to keep the mind active. Whether anyone's paying attention to it or not, it's a whole other matter. Then it gets mixed up with my calling at the time. Every once in a while, something akin to politics, although not really. However, well, here in a run about an hour, I've been on the road for about a little over 2 hours. Yellow light is on that says I'm really low on gas, but you can't trust my gauges to really tell you anything accurate. I filled up with gas in Lubbock. I should be fine getting all the way to Tucumcari without a problem. Although I definitely need to fill up with gas in Tucumcari. It's probably a pretty good place to stop. So I'm going to leave you with the priestly blessing of my fathers. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord cause his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift his countenance toward you and give you peace.